Nicole, did you ever notice how the sign by Ace of Base has really strange key changes?
I did not, Mark. I'm a real person.
Well, let me tell you about it. I'll let you talk about neuroscience gobbledygook.
Yes, I thought you'd never ask.
This is the Nevermind the Music podcast,
where one psychologist
and one musician
deep dive into the songs you love.
So you don't have to.
And there's plenty of time to get off topic.
From Semi-Charmed Life to The Way You Move.
And who could forget The Crossroads?
Is it The Crossroads or The Crossroads?
Save it for the episode, Mark.
Listen to Nevermind the Music
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the House of the Hounds. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to the Dance of the Dragons. I'm John.
And I'm David, and this is our coverage of Season 1, Episodes 9 and 10, titled The Green Council and The Black Queen, of the HBO Max original series House of the Dragon.
Today we'll be giving our hot takes before diving into a deeper discussion of the episodes. Then we'll answer some ravens from listeners.
Please do send us your feedback. We'd love to hear your thoughts and reactions. Send to hotd@thelorehounds.com or head over to the contact page on our website. And there is a contact form and a voicemail feature, and we can drop those voicemails right into the podcast.
Support our community on Patreon or Supercast. Join the conversation on our Discord server or take a listen to any of our affiliate podcasts. You can find links to all of that in the link tree in the show notes below.
John, we did it. Season 1 recap in the can.
Well, not yet. We got a little
we're
while.
We're recording.
The succession was supposed to be in the can for a bunch of people in this episode, and it wasn't. It wasn't.
But anyway, we're here, and we're getting ready for season 2, and we're doing something a little bit different for season 2 with our show guide and season pass. The show guide is a Notion database page thing that we can make live on the internet. And John, you and Brian and Aaron, I believe, was the other person, have put together an amazing online encyclopedia of dragons, mm-hmm. of locations, of characters. That's like really easy to navigate and really easy to use. And this is going to be a subscriber exclusive benefit.
You hear that word, exclusive? People love that word. They're like, I feel important. And they are, if they are a subscriber.
You're the member of the gold, platinum, elite, delta, 3-star.
If you're on TikTok,
club.
You are now one of my elite employees.
There you go.
You know that one, David?
No, I don't. I'm not on TikTok,
Okay.
Instagram.
Well,
I'm on
that's
Instagram.
For people who aren't on this recording.
Yeah. No, I'm not being swayed by nefarious foreign governments in my political.
Oh, you'll just be swayed by a nefarious domestic government.
Basically.
Okay. Fair enough.
So we also have the season pass. Do you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, the season pass is a fun thing. I know more people have been signing up for it lately.
I know, it's exciting.
Basically, you give us $10, we never bill you again, and you get House of the Dragon seasons 1 and 2, full ad-free coverage. You get the show guide. You get everything that you would get if you were a patron for this show only.
That's
right. It is a one-time deal. You don't have to have your credit card subscription going on and you forget about it in 10 years and you're like, wow, I gave the Lorehounds $1 million. You have $10 and that's it. And I know a lot of people are subscription averse.
Yeah.
So this is an option for you.
Yeah. It's super simple. It's this season rewatch. It's all of season 2 as they come out and you get the early access and the show guide. Yeah. Hopefully people will enjoy it. I'm exhausted. I'm just getting nickeled and dimed and subscribed to death. And it seems like a logical way to do it.
I think the Iron Bank of Bravos would approve of this method. I do.
There's a link in the link tree or just in the, I think, do we have it just in the show notes? Or is it
we
on the
do have thing? It just in the show notes
okay.
for the House of the Dragon supercast.
Yep. Got it.
All right. We're having a lot of fun with this show. David, what did you think about these last couple episodes of season one? Did it get you hyped for season two?
They did get me hyped for season two. This is I think we talked about this a little bit on the last podcast we dropped, where all of these episodes pair up really nicely, and 9 and 10 really are a pair, and they're great to watch. I watched them back to back, and what a just great way to end an amazing season. The show had so much work to do in terms of bringing old fans along and satisfying, you know, itching certain scratches, scratching certain itches, maybe I'll say it that way. And then,
don't itch me.
you can pick your nose and you can pick your friends. And then you have to get new people on board because everybody, you know, new people are like, hey, what's this show? And then you have to introduce us into a similar world, but it's its own world because there's a lot of things differently. And then you've got to hype us for season two. And this built a lot of drama. It capitalized on a lot of the tensions that had been building up all season long, and then just really delivered a couple of big punches. And yeah, I was pretty psyched. I'm glad we did this rewatch right up into season two, because now if I'd done the rewatch like earlier, I would have been like, oh, it's too long in between times. So this I think it worked out perfectly.
I'm really glad that we're going to have it fresh in our memory for season two, because I could not imagine not remembering these plot lines, and there's a lot to forget. I mean, we even talked earlier in the season, you had forgotten about Rhaenyra considering, really seriously considering Otto's offer.
Right.
And that's something that I think is important for her characterization going into season two. Like, she feels forced into this war. And that's something that I hope they'll continue to explore as they go through with a bunch of stuff that I can't talk about.
Mildly interesting, as they used to say.
Mildly interesting. We need our own thing, though.
We do need our own thing. And what you were saying, though, too, about Rhaenyra being forced into this war, the having her son completely torn to shreds.
Yeeted, as they say.
What did they say? What did yeeted? They say? Yeeted, yes. They yeeted him. Yeeted it. Whatever. Anyway, that is going to have such an impact on her, and it's going to be such a deep wound. And the issue of holding and restraining and fighting a just war and a just action and doing the things that are necessary to protect yourself and to, you know, do it without going overboard and committing a lot of extreme acts of violence, and especially that affect people who are not involved. That's a really difficult thing. And there's a lot of, as we saw with Daemon, he was like, let's go, let's mount up. And I mean, he's so amped up that he actually, you know, committed a pretty bad act of domestic violence against her, because he's just so enraged at this point. That it came out in that moment. And for anyone to restrain themselves in this situation is really tough. And so I think that dramatic tension is well laid. They really laid the tracks perfectly for it.
Daemon Targaryen misplacing anger? I mean, who's heard of such a thing?
Madness.
All right, David, I'm hyped for season two. I want to get right into this episode.
Let's go.
Let's go for it. The king is dead. Alicent and Otto conspire with the Green Council to crown Aegon.
Alicent's indignation at, what? You've been plotting and planning all of this in secret all along? How dare you? And it's like, girl, please.
I know.
Look around the room. Read the room.
Also, she's completely disingenuous because she talks to Aegon in an earlier episode where she's like, you're going to be king one day. And like, she knew what was going on. I do really enjoy when she, and I mentioned this in our forthcoming podcast with Maester Anthony, I really like when she goes, well, Viserys told me he wanted Aegon to be king. And Otto goes, really? Like, he's just lost all the wind in his body. He's like, he just loves
gleeful.
It. The guy is so happy.
Gleeful isn't a word that describes what he was feeling in that moment. It was like maybe when Laris sees a pair of toes. Sorry.
And of course, we get the first. That's all right. We're here. It's Game of Thrones. It's all.
It's gross. Game of Thrones. It's gross.
You know, we have the first blood in the Dance of the Dragons.
Yes.
From an unexpected source within the Green Council, Criston Cole, of course, does. A little bit aggressive shove. He does a little misjudgment of his own strength and kills Sir Lionel Beesbury. Not Lionel. No, Lyman.
Lyman. Okay. the whole little orb in discs, I don't know if they have official names, but your little check-in thing. Mm-hmm. All along, we're like, do these have any purpose or whatever? It's like, oh, well, there you go. There's some functional aspect to this thing.
That was the purpose, was so that Criston Cole can go shove your face into it and kill you.
Man, what a way to go. That's rough.
Yeah, I did. It did really up the stakes, though, when Otto's like, no, don't move the body. Nobody leaves this room until this is decided.
Yeah, got to lock it down. But then
that was fantastic.
Lord Commander Westerling is like, I'm not having this.
Yeah, and you could see Kristen's like, do I attack him? But I think Criston was afraid. He was like, I don't think I have the skill to beat this guy.
You've got to be a pretty badass to be Lord Commander, right?
Look at that beard. I mean, come on.
What was it? You have to share your idea that you had today. You have to talk about it just briefly.
He's on Cameo, that actor. And I was like, what if we hired Graham this McTavish. Guy to be like, welcome to the Lorehounds podcast. You know what I mean? Like, just do an opening one. Then we looked into it. It was like $5,000. And we were like, okay, no thanks.
There's $5,000 for a commercial one, right? Like a personal one was more affordable. But if you were going to use it for commercial purposes, they have a different rate. So,
Oh, and by the way, that's for a 15-day license. so that'll get us 2 podcasts.
Right. We're not that big. We're not that big.
But anyway, that was my fun idea that
I think it's great.
That was eaten as quickly as Luceris. anyway, yeah, I love the splintering factions here. Beesbury is the only one to speak up in this meeting. And then Westerling is like, I think his tipping point is being asked to go kill Rhaenyra.
Right.
You know, somebody who he's been sworn to protect his whole life.
Right. And then suddenly, you know, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of gross, right? It's kind of gross. The hypocrisy is a little bit hard to stomach.
And I think it's not just the fact that he's being asked that, but that it's very cavalier. It's like, well, Lord Commander Westerling, go to Dragonstone and take care of business. You know what I mean? It's just very cavalier. I mean, Otto has no qualms, not a single qualm.
No, right. There's no oh, my soul, and what do we do, and how do we protect ourselves? And it's just straight up like, okay, execute Order 66 and wipe him out.
He is a little Palpatine-y, isn't he?
Just a little bit.
It was an itsy-bitsy teeny-weeny yellow polka Palpatine-y. Okay.
All right.
I'm going somewhere. That song, the real one, was in Doctor Who this week, so it's been in my head all week.
You told me I should watch the latest Doctor Who.
Oh, it's so good. It's like AI and classism and racism all mixed in one allegory. It's really good. It's very Black Mirror, people are saying.
Relative to when we're recording, I've got a couple of other television shows that I need to watch tonight, so I'll see if I can fit it in later this week.
We'll see. They're a lot of fun. All right, so let's move on to Aegon. He's missing. And Alicent and Otto send out competing teams in the amazing race to find him. He's found in the captivity of Missaria, but not before the Cargill twins discover the bastard fighting pits. Aemond and Criston are ultimately successful in securing Aegon for the queen.
This was a wacky and weird and fun and kind of pathetic in the sense of both Aemond and Aegon trying to deal with their positioning and, you know, Aemon feeling so... second son and that sort of lack of agency second son way.
Right. I think Aemond feels and is probably right that he would be a more competent king than his brother.
Way more. And not nearly a psychopath,
he'd be a nice person, a kind king, but he'd be a competent king in what he was trying to do.
Right. he'd actually think rationally through problems, even though he might be a little bit aggressive about things. He's not a complete degenerate like Aemon.
Right.
I'm sorry, Aegon. Sorry.
Yeah. Aegon, he's a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Sociopathic?
Yes, but there's a less negative word that I'm looking for. He's hedonistic, right?
Okay.
He's really obsessed with what feels good in this moment.
Mm. Yeah. And he doesn't have, he doesn't have a value or moral center above and beyond himself.
And he doesn't have like 1 second of foresight.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's in the moment.
He never thinks about what's coming next.
Right. I think
we'll see if that plays into what's going on, you know, as this dance goes on.
The whole fighting pit thing is a real dark turn. Like that's like really gross. That's even more than Joffrey. I mean, Joffrey was pretty horrific.
He didn't have kids fight each other, though.
He didn't have kids fight each other.
He didn't do that.
He might have shot some people with a crossbow.
And as far as we know, he was not a rapist.
Right. As far as we know.
As far as we know. But that's all, you know, we can only go on what we are shown on screen.
Right.
Or told about.
So what do you think about the Eric and Eric of it all? This is when we really get these guys.
Maester Anthony said the other night when we talked, I know things that I can't say mildly interesting. I love these two characters. I think it's a really fascinating plot line, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
I don't get it's not that I don't get something. It's that I'm like, okay, tell me more. Like you're clearly setting something up here. Why make these twin thing happen? Like why make this thing? And even to the point of, oh, I'm Eric, not Eric, sir. Like he says at one point, there's a misidentification earlier on in the season, and you're like, oh, so what? So they're making something of
It matters.
These brothers.
It matters.
Yeah.
You gotta know. You gotta remember which is which.
And I thought I had them, but then I thought Eric was more brunette, and Eric with an E was a little bit more blonde, but then they made it really hard to distinguish them.
Just supposed to be identical. Just Eric is team black. And Eric is team green.
And I can't believe that Eric is going for team green. Like, you saw the same stuff, dude. And that's interesting that they split. And then Eric sits there and watches his brother fighting with Aemon, right? No, with Kristen Cole. Sorry, with Kristen Cole. And he doesn't help his brother.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So,
agreed.
I don't know what's up with that. Like, you're like, dude, what are you doing?
So. Yeah, Eric has had enough. I think after Eric sees the fighting pit is when he makes his final decision of, I can't possibly support this claimant.
But he goes with green, though.
Eric, I'm talking about.
Eric, yeah. Eric with an E, yeah. Right. No, Eric has got something. He's like, this is gross. I can't support this, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know why Eric didn't help Eric when they were fighting.
Yeah. Did you enjoy Missaria's development? She's no longer just an owner of a brothel, but she is now a spy master.
Yeah, I like it. I want to see more of it, and I want to see her get her revenge on Otto for burning her place of business down. And right. I thought it was
I think that's a Laris move. If I'm going to,
you might be right. Yeah, you might
that's
be right.
That's a Laris move. That's his signature move, man. You got to remember that.
You are correct. That's right. But, you
he's
know, it's
very
gonna, it's
good
gonna
at arson.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I loved the fact that they stashed him in underneath the central pit or the central candle altar thing for the seven there. Like, that was pretty.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
It was pretty cheeky.
And I love emo kid Aegon. It's pretty funny.
Right.
And I love, you know, they just had the premiere a couple days ago, or maybe it was last night. And you can see all the pictures of the two actors for Aegon and Rhaenyra together, and you're like, "Aw, family photo." I thought it was a really effective chasing. It really ramped up the tension in a fun way, which you didn't expect that to happen.
Right.
You didn't expect that to happen in an episode all about the aftermath of a king's death that opens up with a murder in the Green Council.
And it adds a lot of dramatic tension. Who's going to get to him first? And then when they do get to him, what's going to happen after that? So, yeah, it was fun. And it was a fun way to see the city and do some stuff around the city a little bit. So,
yeah. So it's interesting, too, that Otto and Alicent both want him before the other.
Mm-hmm.
And this is mm-hmm. a big source of conflict.
Huge. Huge.
Is it just that Otto wants Rhaenyra dead and Alicent doesn't, or is there something bigger here?
I think the way that I read it in while watching it was that Alicent is trying to moderate the whole thing so that it doesn't spiral. She's trying to keep it from spiraling too far out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that her father's inclination is to strike and wipe out the enemy as quickly as possible. But she doesn't want that. She's trying to find some sort of middle ground, some sort of, you know, peaceful resolution. Look, just go to exile and, right. you know, renounce your claim and you can keep your life and everybody will be fine. Whereas she, yeah, she thinks that Otto was just going to, you know, take everybody out.
Right, right.
And whoever can get that whisper into the ear of the king to come, like that's, you know, whoever is the last person to talk to him, they think they have him under control, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I also think that, you know, Alicent is constantly cleaning up after the messes left by the men around her.
Yeah, very good point.
Viserys, and now yep. Aemon is starting the war later yep. In the second episode because he's just being careless and a jock and rude and crude and just bullying to the extent where he loses control of his own instruments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, she's constantly picking up the pieces for people. And so she feels like I have to be close to Aegon if I'm going to
yes.
get this piece together.
Right, right. And that's what it highlights even more what Rhaenys says to her, just like, girl, you should just be queen. Like, forget these dudes, you know?
Right.
Just
right.
Just be queen and end this.
Yep.
And I don't think it's bad advice in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm. So Larys has Missario's brothel burned down. We already talked about that.
Yeah.
Alicent and Aegon head to the Dragon Pit for the coronation, where thousands of citizens of King's Landing are hoarded in to witness the coronation.
So this had some fun echoes to season one in a number of places. Not only the shame scene, but there was something
you mean
else.
Not season one, but Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Sorry, yeah, my apologies. Yeah. And it had some vibe. There was some other thing from Game of Thrones, wasn't there, where there was some crowd stuff going on in the town? And there's been a couple times.
Been a few times. I think. You know, whenever you have everybody gathered in one place, I think of the burning of the Great Sept by Cersei with wildfire.
Right. Yeah.
Which, by the way, has the best music ever in Game of Thrones.
It's been a while since I've watched it, so I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's where they use piano for the first time in the whole series.
Oh, very cool.
It's really beautiful. I could go on about that all day.
All right.
But I won't, because we're doing House of the Dragon now. I think that it's a really clever setup for the doors being barred later, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, nobody's allowed out when everybody needs to get out because there's a freaking dragon around.
Yeah, and then there's the whole, yeah, anyway. Yeah, I was really worried for Rhaenys being able to, you know, get out and not get trampled or get, you know, clobbered mm-hmm. by one of the gold cloaks because she's, you know, so important. But that she is then able to take advantage of that once she realizes where they're being directed.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of like, oh, hope maybe, let me just try to survive a little longer. Maybe, just maybe I can right. pull this off. And, you know, she knows that place pretty well enough, and mm-hmm. She's able to take advantage of it. So, that was, and Eric was going to, you know, spirit her away. And obviously we know later that he's got the crown stashed mm-hmm. in his bag that he's running around with.
He's all team black. He's all the way.
Full in.
And so there's a couple details I want to talk about here. The crown itself.
Yeah.
They chose Aegon the Conqueror's crown, mm-hmm. eschewing Viserys's crown, which I think was also Jaehaerys's crown.
Okay.
Now, Aegon the Conqueror, of course, was the first king of Westeros.
Right.
But he did rule with fire and blood, right? Like he burned castles down to force people into submission.
Okay.
And Jaehaerys was known as the old king and the one who created peace in the realm and really solidified, because Jaehaerys came to power right after a bunch of people died in other succession wars. Like, Jaehaerys actually was the most peaceful time in Targaryen history at this point. And Viserys continued that, but of course stoked the flame of everything while he was alive. Now Aegon's like, well, we're going back to conqueror times. No more peace. This is conflict again. That's what it symbolizes to me. I'm the tough guy. You're not going to want to mess with me. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Rhaenyra, I think when Rhaenyra puts on the crown in episode 10, that's where Rhaenys starts to go, huh, she might be the one who's going to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the crowns matter here is what I'm saying.
I think I agree with you. And we'll I guess we can talk about it when we get to episode 10. But yeah, that Aegon chooses that crown. Yeah, this is definitely significant. And it makes his look. It looks well on. It looks good on him, you know, in terms of being that kind of character. So.
Right. It's cool stuff. And then the other scene I wanted to talk about is Allison saying, "You imbecile," to "Do you love me?" Oh, you get like, I'm so conflicted on this, because, you know, obviously Aegon is a predator and an awful person overall and incredibly selfish, but everyone wants the approval and affection of their mother, right? Like, that's just something that we all crave,
right?
Or a mother figure, if you will. And when he asks her, "Do you love me?" and she responds with, "You imbecile," I just feel like she closed the door to the connection he was trying to forge there.
Mm-hmm. So maybe in that moment, he might have chosen a slightly different, or had some of that moderating influence when the crowds started to swell his ego.
Right. But no, he doesn't. And right. I mean, you even see in the trailers for season 2, Aemon's like, "Oh, well, our mother has too much sympathy for the enemy, so she's a fool." And I think that's going to start getting to Aegon in a way that maybe it wouldn't as much if Allison had a real bond with him. And you remember, even when he's a baby earlier in the season, she's constantly giving him to her wet nurse because she can't handle
it. He's very colicky, as they used to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, but also it doesn't seem like she knew how to soothe him ever.
Good point. Yeah. Yeah. Good
Soothing point. A baby is an art. That I have
from
perfected.
A man who is in the prime of his skills. That's right. Yeah, it's true. She has always had a difficult relationship with him. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's trying to feel some connection with her,
right?
But as they say, heavy is the head that wears the crown, right? And I think when both crowns get placed, it changes both of these characters in fundamental ways.
Yep. So I've combined all the Rhaenys stuff basically for our last bullet point on this episode. In both of these episodes, there's not a lot of plot points. It's mostly little moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or big moments, I guess. During the coronation, Rhaenys, freed by Sir Eric after her talk with Alicent, bursts through the floor with her dragon, Maelys, killing a number of small folk. She stops short of killing the royal family and flies off.
So we've touched on it a number of different times, but this conversation that she and Allison have earlier in the episode is one of my favorite conversations of this entire season. It's just such a boiled down, perfect thing between these two women who are, you know, dealing with all these different circumstances. And I'm a big Rhaenys stan, and she's just laying it down on Allison and just saying, "Yo, you know, you're so blind, you're still even serving these men." Right. And her indignity at being kept hostage is just, you know, just got to burn. It's just, you know, she's not used to that. And you don't treat other royals. So she, in the way that she deducts very quickly, "Oh, the king's dead. Oh, now I start to see all these things that are going on."
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just loved the whole culmination of the Rhaenys plot line in this.
Yeah, the whole thing really makes sense why she ends up siding with Rhaenyra. I think she just kind of got caught up in the injustice of it all. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just so gross the way that they did it.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, if they really believed in the claim, then maybe mm-hmm. they would treat with Rhaenyra before they crowned him. But instead, they chose to do everything in secret, to imprison people, to hang people who they couldn't trust. It's tough. I think maybe if the Hightowers go to Rhaenyra and say, like, look, we think there will be civil unrest if you are named, if you become the queen. You know, we don't want to go to war. We want to leave you with Dragonstone. We want to reaffirm your children as legitimate, and we want to, you know, give them Dragonstone and Driftmark. That's what I'm looking for. Your sons will have honor places at court, things and that. I think she might listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
I really do think she might listen to that, because she does listen when Otto comes later, right? She listens after the crowning's done. I don't think that that's necessarily because of the crowning, because she doesn't like Otto. There's nothing Otto can say that's going to convince her to trust him.
Right.
But I think maybe Alicent, she might listen to at some point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly locking the door, locking her in her room is not going to, you've got no chance now.
That's, oh, I meant Rhaenyra, sorry, with this Rhaenyra. Whole thing of maybe they should have treated. Rhaenyse.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But Rhaenyse, yeah. I see what you're saying. You know, have you ever imagined yourself on the throne? All yeah. that. That was brilliant great. Line. Yeah, and I mean, we'll see what happens with Corlys next episode, but I think Rhaenyse definitely hedges her bets, but she does immediately go fly off to see Rhaenyra. I think just because she feels it's unjust to leave her blindsided.
Right. Yeah. Agreed. And she's doing that much, you know, to say like, hey, of course, the big conversation piece during, you know, when this first aired was, well, if she just, you know, said the words, you know, end of story. We would not have a season two necessarily.
Right.
But it's a debatable point. Should she have done it or should she have not?
Mm-hmm.
And there's
she says it's not my war to start. I'll just kill a bunch of civilians and
yeah, be instead. On my way. Yeah, exactly. If she hadn't killed as many small folk, then well, okay, maybe, you know, but yeah, she ended up killing a lot of small folk. And it I don't know what it does to the Greens. In as much as they just stared a dragon down the barrel of its, you know, fire breathingness, they didn't die. And so now is that supposed to strike fear into you and cow you and, you know, have you step back from things? Or does that then spur you into action and you think, oh, maybe I should go kill all my enemies right quick. You know, it's a difficult, it's not a difficult thing. It's like, how is that going to, you know, and there's this idea that you never threaten anything that you're not prepared to follow through on. So
right.
She threatens them and then doesn't go through with it. So yeah, what's the message you're sending? I guess that's the big question I'm asking. What did you do, Rhaenyse, by not burning them up, but scaring them in that way? Did that
half
actually
measures.
Happen? Yeah. Yeah, half measures. We know where that got, or the old king, where that ended him up.
And Ned Stark, you know, Ned Stark is the king of half measures.
There you go.
Take your children and run. Oh, why would I let you do anything after that, right? It's it's dumb person behavior, as it's I like to say on this show.
So that's the one mistake I think, she made. I mean, if she just busted out and flown away, cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fair enough. Or did she even need to come up through the
floor? Probably not.
Could she have probably just flown out the door and called it good?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, she wanted to make a statement. I think she just wanted to ruin that coronation. She just felt so sour about it.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and she
point.
Did ruin it. Like, she was successful in that.
Right. Oh, boy. Okay.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll go to episode 10. We'll be right back with more House of the Dragon. And we're back with more House of the Dragon. David, it's time for episode 10, the finale of season one, which really, I think, impressed everybody. We were all very happy with it when it came out, and I was thrilled with it rewatching it. How about you?
It was, they stuck the landing, as the kids say. They really brought in, it was a great capstone episode. It resolved some plot lines. It opened up some new plot lines. It just, they nailed it. There's, I have very few notes for this. Mm-hmm. They, I think they found the right way to generate more energy is while at the same time they released all of the energy that had built up in season one. They nailed the balance perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a great episode. And, you know, that last shot of Rhaenyra standing there and looking so resolved, I think is the most hype I've been for another season since Daenerys was sailing across the narrow sea in Game of Thrones. I think season six it was.
Okay.
Maybe it was season seven. But anyway, the point is, it's hard to make me that hype for a season two.
Cool.
And here I am, very excited for season two.
It's hot lore summer.
It's hot lore summer. Oh, I got to be faster.
You're slow on the soundboard.
Too. I don't have my mouse. It's a whole thing. I'm traveling. Okay. I'm traveling. Right. All right. Rhaenys arrives at Dragonstone to warn Rhaenyra about the coronation and the impending attack by the Greens. The stress sends Rhaenyra into premature labor, resulting in a stillbirth. At the pyre of her stillborn daughter, Ser Eric arrives with Viserys' crown, which Rhaenyra accepts. The onlookers accept Rhaenys. Neil.
So we started the season with a birthing scene, and we end the season with a birthing scene.
Mm-hmm.
This one was less problematic in some ways. I wasn't as disturbed, maybe just because there weren't any, you know, nursemaids, you know, restraining the person.
In fact, they were told to get away.
Yeah. So yeah.
They were like, can we help you? And they're like, no.
It's an interesting way to bookend the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is someone who's really strong and really, you know, in control of her situation. Well, in control of her birthing situation. But at the same time, she has to plead with her son to stop her husband from starting a war without her.
Yeah, because Daemon's like, let's go. Let me put on my boots. Let me get a sword. And we're off to the races.
And let's praise Jace for actually doing it. I mean, I'd be a little freaked out to stand up to Father Uncle Daemon.
Yeah, for real. And yeah, it's interesting. It's too bad these boys have such a stunted and messed up childhood, because they, you know, they seem like pretty good kids, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that they could turn out, you know, if their father wasn't burned alive, if Harwin Strong wasn't
right,
you know, and it's all that weirdness. But yeah, these are good kids.
Yeah. And I think Jace in particular has a really, he's one of the more fleshed out ones in the books, I think.
Okay.
And I hope that they'll add even more in the show, because it seems like an interesting plotline that he's going to have going for him. And obviously, Luke's plotline is done, so we don't have to worry about him. And Joffrey, we haven't even met.
Right. What's the deal with her stillborn daughter? Was there some dragon-esque deformities there?
So that's what it says in the book.
Okay.
But in the show, they took that out. It was just a normal human.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was just gross.
Okay. But I thought I saw
it. It was a human.
All right.
But in the book, that is what it's described as. Like, oh, it was like monstrous.
Okay.
Stillbirth.
Right.
Which is an awful way to talk about a stillbirth, because it's a tragedy for anybody. But yeah, I mean, was it you who said, or what did I just see this on Reddit or something? Like that the whole,
I know, me and Reddit were so hard to.
I know. The funeral pyre. Oh, I don't know. We talk a lot. It's funny. I was saying the other day, like, people will point out to me things that I said on a podcast, and I'll forget that I even said them.
Yeah, completely.
But I mean, there's what? How many hours of us now? Anyway, the point is, you know, there's this lowest of low moment where she's burning a funeral pyre of her stillborn daughter. That's like her all-time low. Mm-hmm. That is interrupted by her highest of high being crowned by. Mm-hmm. I think Daemon puts the crown on physically, right? Yeah,
right.
And Eric delivers it though,
right?
And her father's crown, which I think was very meaningful to her. Like, if it were reversed, if they had Viserys's crown on Aegon and then Rhaenyra had to settle for a family antique, I think that she would not have been as happy. But I think it was really meaningful for her to be wearing Viserys's crown.
Hugely meaningful for Eric to bring it to her, too, to know that there's at least one person out there, right, who was on the other team, ostensibly, in the other team's camp, and then was like, you know what, I'm going to brave a whole bunch of dangers to try to deliver this to you, because I believe in you, and I recognize you as the legitimate person. That's pretty powerful, and I think that's got to do something to a person when they, you know, when you start factoring that stuff. And then, like you say, because it's her father's crown, it's a double whammy.
Right. And I think that Eric bringing the crown was enough of a loyalty test for Daemon, where Daemon didn't have to do the dragon loyalty test like he did with the other ones. But it is a big difference, right? You have some Kingsguard who live there on Dragonstone with Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
And then others chose to come there, like Lord Commander Westerling and Sir Eric Cargill.
Right.
And it's super meaningful to hear. I mean, like, think about how we feel when we get a Patreon subscriber and amplify that by a million, right? Like, I risk my life to help you.
That's right. And then Rhaenys doesn't bow. And you kind of, I don't know, I kind of respect her for that. I mean, she nods her head a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. If I remember right.
And I love, she's really good at doing, Eve Best is really good at doing these smirks where you're like, I'm thinking about things.
Yeah.
I'm really processing information right now. You know, that kind of deal.
And I am I have such a history and stature in this kingdom that, you know, it's cool. And there's a point which backs up her point of why she didn't burn up the greens. Are there, you know, arguably, but the point of, can she speak for her house? She is not the spokesperson of Driftmark, right? Her husband is. And so can she bow for her house? Can she take a knee for her house? It, protocol? I'm not sure. I don't know.
I think if it were anybody else there, Daemon would have been threatening them to bow.
Yeah.
But he knew that you need honey for the Valyrians. You can't have, you cannot have this, you know, you need the carrot, not the stick.
Yeah. You don't want any bad blood with the Targaryens.
Mm-hmm. So Otto Hightower presents Aegon's terms for surrender, offering Rhaenyra Dragonstone and a confirmation of Lucerys' succession to Driftmark. Daemon tries to respond violently, and Rhaenyra stops him and tells Otto she will consider it. She tells her Black Council that she must consider the good of the realm.
So this happens on the walkway again, right? I watched these episodes the other week, and I'm trying to picture the scene.
Yeah, it is. And Rhaenyra
flies in,
lands behind Otto, and is very threatening.
So, and this is where we had earlier in the season when young Rhaenyra is coming to Daemon and asking for the eggs back, and so it's this whole echoing of that situation again. Perfect time to take out, to decapitate your enemy, but yet she's trying to be honorable. And, you know, when does honor get you killed, or when does honor win you the war? And I think it's an interesting balance.
It's parlay, right? And and you even see that later with Boros Beleriand. He's saying, you know, they came as a messenger. I'm not going to say that messengers are going to get killed when they come here.
That's right. That's right. Salt and what is it? Bread and salt. You know, the
well, I don't think he had bread and salt, but that's,
no. But you know what I mean. The idea is, there are forms that you follow, and we saw in Game of Thrones when those forms don't get followed, it really upends social order. It really pisses people off.
Yep, absolutely.
So if you come under a banner of treat, then you have to respect that. Otherwise, you're really going to put yourself in a more precarious position.
Right. And I really love the way that Rhaenyra considers here, you know, maybe it is right. You know, we have our life here. If my kid's succession is, you know, if my kid's succession is shored up, if I know that they're going to be okay when I'm gone, then maybe it is best to just keep the peace here.
Except Otto Hightower. I just can't accept terms from that dude.
Well, I think she would have accepted them.
Mm.
I kind of think she would have accepted them, but for the killing of Lucerys.
Mm, interesting. Okay. Oh, right. Because she doesn't accept them in that moment, does she?
No, she doesn't. She says, right. I'm going to consider you'll have my answer on the morrow.
That's right.
And then
that's
she goes back to the council and Daemon's like, that was insulting. And Rhaenyra's like, was it? I mean, you know, it's not right, but it's tough because, you know, she's saying, I don't want to be Queen of the Ashes, which, by the way, is very reminiscent of Daenerys, mm-hmm. who eventually did go mad and burn up the whole city.
Right.
But yeah, it's, I think she would have chosen to keep peace for the sake of peace, which is in some ways a valiant effort, right? Like a something that to be admired.
We in our American history, we actually have a real world example of that in a past presidential election where things were a little bit, and somebody said, you know, okay, you know, I'll accept the judgment. I won't fight on for this cause. Mm. And so I think that's another thing that the show does really well is we can identify with and see all of these very human circumstances and human decisions that are being made. And that mm-hmm. makes the show much more compelling.
Right.
Because we can see Rhaenyra trying to be centered and considerate. And like you said, you know, and not to be Queen of the Ashes. And that's, there's some real world resonance there. So.
Right. I agree with you. I agree. That does remind me now of the 2000 election. I'll just say it. I'll just say what it was. That's a I never thought of it that way. So thank you for bringing that up.
Well, that's why we podcast is we get to to pull these different weird connections. Speaking of favorite music from Game of Thrones, I don't know if you ever saw somebody remixed Daenerys' Dragon Ride to an AC/DC song, and it was amazing. It worked really well. I think I have to go watch that after we finish podcasting now. I'm trying to remember that it was which AC/DC song was it? It wasn't Hell's Bells. Maybe it was Hell's Bells. I have to Google it now. Read the next
we'll figure it out later. Google. All right. Rhaenys and Corlys discuss the war and Corlys pledges to remain neutral. Rhaenys convinces Corlys that Rhaenyra is the only one keeping the realm together, and Corlys allies with the Blacks.
Quickly, it was Hell's Bells. Song.
Hell's Bells. Yeah. Okay, great.
I don't know. Did you ever see it?
No. Okay. I know the song, but I have not seen this.
It's amazing. It makes that whole scene change for me. So, yeah, just Google for AC/DC Hell's Bells Daenerys, and you'll find it.
All right.
So
nice.
All right, so yeah, poor Luke, right? He's got to ride into the storm.
Oh, well, we didn't talk about Rhaenys.
Oh, sorry, did I jump the point? I was busy Googling.
Rhaenys, that's the plot point I read. Don't worry. You know, Corlys, he's like, oh, I'm finally ready to do the right thing. And she's like, don't do the right thing. Go and, you know, walk in with your swagger and pledge to...
With your bedtime storybook reading voice and bend the knee. Yeah.
Mm. I could listen to him all day.
And he does. And he's kind of keeps everybody guessing a little bit, but then, yeah, he pulls through. And I don't know. That's a big moment for Team Black, right?
It is. I mean, without the fleet, I think they are going to have a much tougher time with King's Landing.
Yeah, they'd be really bottled up. They'd have very little tactical mobility.
So. Especially since Dragonstone is just an island, right? It's not on the mainland. So they really need a navy.
And you've got to be able to, I mean, King's Landing has access to a lot of fertile lands behind them. So, but they still need trade goods, minerals, ores, things like that they get from other places. And so if you can bottle up part of their economic infrastructure with the ships, that's pretty important.
Right. And Corlys makes clear, like, we are going to stop the shipping lanes to Essos.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's tough for King's Landing. I mean, there's going to be starvation. And something that really, you know, you don't consider that much in this show because it's all focused on the royals is the effect on the small folk.
Mm-hmm.
And Missaria is, like I said, when we talked to Anthony, which people will hear next week, Missaria is really one of the only characters that highlights that highlights the effect on the small folk.
That's true. She's our one entree into the small folk Which I think, you know, I have to give it to Martin that he does a pretty good job of this in the original books in terms of seeing the effect of war on the countryside and on people.
Right, right. So to determine the loyalty of her prospective allies, Rhaenyra sends Lucerys to Storm's End to meet with Boros Baratheon. She sends Jacaerys to the Reach and Winterfell to secure the loyalty of the Arryns and the Starks. Daemon tries to secure more dragons by going underneath the Dragonmont to find Vermithor. Which, by the way, the show doesn't name Vermithor, but we all know it's Vermithor. Can we just dispense with tomfoolery?
Sure, if you tell me if that's the case, that I'll
That's
I'll
Vermithor.
Believe it.
It's almost certainly Vermithor.
Okay, I believe you.
Which was King Jaehaerys's dragon.
Got it. Okay.
That has laid unclaimed since his death.
Got it. And not wanting to be claimed.
Right. So, there's been no one to claim them. And the question is, who will be claiming these dragons?
Because
you need a rider for each of the dragons.
Right, right.
Who's going to claim them?
Right. I feel bad for Luke. Luke, I think this is a tactical error. I think sending Luke to the Reach and to Winterfell would have been the smarter play because
the idea was you go across the street, you're the younger one, and the other ones will do the perilous journeys to the Reach to and the Winterfell.
North. Yeah, and that has a logic too, but it's just the Baratheons with Boros was just not at all receptive. Never mind that Aemond is there, never mind that it's a storm. It was like, hey, the Boros... was just
It's Storm's End. There's always storms in the Stormland.
Sure,
it's often stormy.
Right, and but in this case, right, this little kid getting beat up by this storm. And how do Dryovans navigate? They must have some onboard GPS stuff. Like, doesn't matter. I don't know. I just feel
a piece of clothing from the place you're going to.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, the ravens get around, so the dragons must figure it out.
Fair enough. Magic, as they say.
Yeah, I just feel bad for Luke having to go to this really difficult place in this, under difficult circumstances.
Right.
Regardless of the fact that Aemond is, already there. So Boros was just not nice. I guess I'm reacting to that as much as anything. And really great visuals, too, in the scene, just in the Stormlands and the escorting him into the castle, and then with I have to look at the show guide, Vhagar for rising up behind there, and then you get a real scale of how big Vhagar is relative to other stuff, and you're like, oh damn, that's a big dragon, and Luke is small.
He's tough dude. She's a tough gal.
Yes. And what is Luke is on Arrax, who's a wormling, practically.
Yeah, really young dragon. And that's part of the reason why she wanted Jacaerys to go to the north.
Right. Because it was a long trip, right?
Right.
It would be physically taxing to get up there on little Arrax.
Right.
But then we'll get to it in a minute. But
let's talk about it. Luke arrives at Storm's End.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
To find Aemond, already allied with Lord Boros and betrothed to his daughter. When Aemond demands an eye from Luke, Boros prohibits violence in his hall. Luke attempts to ride home and is attacked by Aemond and Vhagar. Both dragon riders lose control of their dragons, and Vhagar eats Luke and Arryx. Rhaenyra learns about the death and cries before finding her resolve.
So, I'm just trying to think of what order to address things here. I mean, Luke losing control of his dragon, like, what are you doing attacking a dragon that's like 15 times bigger than you? I mean, I know he's trying to control his mount, but... What are you doing,
Well, Arryx, I don't think he ever wanted Arryx to do it. I think the whole point was Vhagar was... Because Aemond has more control over Vhagar than Luke had over Arryx. So Arryx struck the first blow, even though Vhagar was getting too close. Vhagar was really making it difficult for Arryx to fly and it was invading personal space. And so Arix gave sort of a, you know, when a dog is not aggressive, but scared, they just, they put their mouth on, you know, your arm.
Okay. That like makes sense. Right.
I think that's what Yeah, I think that's what Arix did. And Vhagar was like, you want to play, little boy? And Vhagar just completely demolished him, obviously.
That makes sense, because it seemed like such a frontal attack, right? Just breathing fire on the side of his head. But it's, I get it.
They're fire resistant, right? So it seems like...
Yeah, so what's it going to do?
You know, it's Arix just being like, hey, step off.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, I'm going to bop you a little bit because I'm scared and I'm trying to get you to back off a little bit. Yeah. Okay, right. That makes sense. That makes more sense. I like it.
I love it as two dogs, right?
Yeah. I love the visual of in the flat spin of the object, of the body parts and stuff falling into the sea. There's no flaming, you know, nothing. No, this is pretty indignant, right? You just got chomped and all of this stuff is just drifting down to the ocean. It's pretty sad. But visually it was amazing, and the whole fight, you know, and the flight through the storm clouds and stuff, it all worked on me really well.
Right. Can we agree that Boros Baratheon is illiterate?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like, where's the Easter?
Oh man.
And we get to see Aemon's eye. That was very cool. The gem thing that he's got in there. I'm sure there's some lore all about that.
It's spooky.
Yeah, it's very spooky. It makes him look very spooky. Evil. And yeah, I guess it was. I mean, Rhaenyra is saying, okay, you know, you're my bannerman. You're sworn to me. You're supposed to be, you know, loyal to me. But he didn't come with anything in his hand, right? He didn't come with promises or anything. Just like, he kind of calls it rightly out. You know, you expect me to be like a dog.
Right. Yeah, and it's really tough. I mean, if I were Boros and I was really trying to, you know, stop this violence, I'd say, Aemon, if you want my respect and my allegiance, do not leave this room until Arix is far away. You know, stay an extra couple hours. At the same time, I think Aemon had already won, and Aemon would have just gone anyway. So I don't know if anyone could have stopped this from happening other than Aemon.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Right. What's next?
Next is listener feedback.
Oh, are we done?
Well, we can talk about Rhaenyra's resolve, but that's basically it.
Yeah, I guess. And what a great way, because we're all like, oh shit. Like, what is that going to do? And do we know if season two going to pick right up, or are we going to be sort of in media res?
I think it's several days later. I think that's it.
So it's still going to be pretty fresh. Yeah. All right, that's cool. And then things are going
to
heat up fast.
It has to pick right up. Just trust me, it's going to pick right up. It's going to pick right up.
Cool, yeah. We got, and we did 80 episodes, so, or we're doing 80 episodes this season. So yeah, it's going to be intense, I think.
And early reviews are good. People went to the premiere and are saying it was really great.
Okay. So Hot Lore Summer's getting off to a bang. We've got Acolytes coming in with some good early reviews, and if House of the Dragon comes in early. I haven't heard anything about The Boys yet, so.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'm looking forward to watching The Acolyte. It's coming out tonight.
Yes, exciting.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got feedback-wise?
We've got a couple pieces of feedback. One was from Nicole B., who wrote in a couple weeks ago, but we were not up to this yet, so I saved it for this episode.
Okay, cool.
I said, waiting for episode 9 for this. It's about the Grand Council episode.
Okay.
Nicole B., by the way, you can write in just like Nicole B. by going to hotd@thelorehounds.com, sending us an email, or you can go to thelorehounds.com, click on the contact page, and leave us a contact form entry or a voicemail. You could also tag us on Discord. Plenty of ways to do it.
Yep.
Hey, guys. There is a brilliant callback in this episode that really brings Allison's character into focus. After her day of scheming, she returns to her chambers to pour some wine and finds Larys waiting for her. She says, "The hour is late, Lord Larys." This is near the same response Allison had earlier in the season when Viserys summons her to bed. She is about to enjoy her tea and is interrupted by the maid delivering the message. Allison responds, "The hour is quite late." I find this is a fascinating bit of character building, as both lines are in response to the implication of sexual acts, for which Alicent is simply dutiful. Mm-hmm. But unlike Viserys, who is her lord, husband, and king, here is a queen who gives in to the power of others rather than use her power as queen over them. She could easily flex authority when Larys would find and with Larys and find a less demeaning way to use him for her information and her dirty work. But she submits her feet for his fetish and turns away, disgusted with herself. Even after being queen for so many years, she has not learned how to play the Game of Thrones instead of being played. Yeah, that's rough. I think she also knows how dangerous Larys is. That's the problem. Is like Larys has had many people killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and killed in her name, and so he's got actually some blackmail on top of her, right?
Yeah, that and I mean, she knows that he has a spy network in the Red Keep. He could very easily order her killed, and she would be dead. She wouldn't be able to do anything to stop it.
That's true.
So I think he has some real power over her, unfortunately, because he's an awful person.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's in for a penny already here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too late. It's too late for her. She doesn't have the guile to roll up his spy network or to take it over, because you don't...
Right. Right.
It's better to decapitate and take over his network than it is to try to take it out. Mm-hmm. That would be a very hard thing to do. You'd have to be really accomplished to do that.
So Nicole says, I am not team queen, as I lost all sympathy for Alicent with how she handled her rapist son and planned teeing Diana. But high praise to the writers for this bit of storytelling. Team Rhaenys all the way. That dragon riding mama bear warrior would have ruled over the Seven Kingdoms way better than any of the blacks and greens. Thanks for the coverage, Nicole.
Thanks, Nicole.
Yeah, thanks. And I know, David, you are a big Rhaenys and Eve Best stan.
One of my faves, absolutely. I can't wait to see what they get up to this season.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the precarious pathway that the Targaryens are walking and that she's walking. Right, she's got a lot of power, and she has to know when to flex that power just enough to protect her position. But if she doesn't flex enough, she can easily be wiped off the map.
Right.
So.
Right.
And then just all the tragedies with her kids, you know, hopefully her granddaughters can have a better fate.
Yeah, absolutely. So Swampy writes in with a subject line: "Hot damn, hot D." Just finished my Hot D rewatch in preparation for season 2, and I'm struck by the high quality of the writing. On rewatch, my wife and I were pointing out all the ways the war could have been avoided throughout the entire season. It starts with the prologue at the Great Council, where Rhaenys could have been named. Her son Laenor would have been the clear heir, and Rhaenys would have guided the succession with a strong hand, unlike Vizzy T. Episode 8 was my favorite because you can see Viserys being tested and rising to the occasion beautifully at the very last minute. Alicent and Rhaenyra are clearly ready to mend fences, but the weight of all the bad decisions is too great, and Aegon and Aemon too rotten. This through line goes all the way to the death of Lucerys and Arryx, which was the perfect way to end the season because the tragedy felt both avoidable and inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If only Rhaenyra had sent someone else to Storm's End instead of Luke. If only the dragons were slightly better trained. But Viserys pointed out in episode 1 that the dragons are too hard to control. If only Aemond wouldn't have been so reckless. If only he had been raised 5% better by Alicent, who should have had a better dad than Otto. At every turn, the characters are thrust into the worst possible timeline, and I can't wait for season 2 of the drawn-out car crash that is Hot D. Keep up the great coverage, Swampy. Thanks, Swampy. I agree with a lot of your points there. I think that there are a lot of exit ramps on this war path, and nobody took any of them, so here we are. But you know what? It's better TV if they don't take any exit ramps, because we want the war. It's not real people. It's okay.
I think, too, that outlines the point of all of the little missteps, all of the little slights, all of the little secrets, all of these little cuts and hurts and bruises that just keep building up and building up. And, you know, when Aemond is like, oh shit, I just killed Luke. I didn't mean for that to happen. I was just having a little bit of fun in my own way. You know, it's just all these things just build up and they just lead to this completely out of control situation. And to pull that off in the, on the script, on the page is one thing, but then to pull it off through the narration and the character development, chef's kiss for the writers and this production team, because they really balanced what could have gone easily off the rails on either sides of in terms of character development and all these different plot points. So yeah,
I totally agree. Everyone did a great job this season. So I'm very excited for season two.
Speaking of, yes, this is it, right?
Let's talk about what's happening now. I do a weekly podcast schedule that I've been working on, and I was a little late with this week, but it's out now. We've got on the Lorehound's main feed this podcast, Doctor Who Season 1, Episode 6, Dot and Bubble, really good episode. The Acolyte Season 1, Episodes 1 and 2, that's going to be me and Alicia on our feed, the Star Wars Canon Timeline feed, and the Star Wars feed. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, I believe, is already out on our main feed. That's a one-shot you did with Alicia, and I know she had another conversation about the current movie.
Right, yeah. So she and I talked about the OG movies, and then she talked with Luke from, or no, no, I'm sorry, Logan from Academy of Death Racers about the current movie.
Nice. And you also did Furiosa Mad Max Saga.
Yes, and that is out for the patrons now, for the subscribers now, and will be out public Wednesday morning this week.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
And of course, we've got plenty of affiliate podcasts rolling. Rings and Rituals will be back next week with an episode on Chapter 7, The Eye. A lot of great conversations lately, talking about elf war songs and a bunch of other stuff. Really loving it. The Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast is going to be back. I already said The Acolyte. We're doing the beginning two episodes. Radioactive Ramblings is here with a Fallout lore episode on God Bless the Enclave, whatever that means. And they'll be covering The Boys soon in full. So that'll be a lot of fun. And Properly Howard Movie Review is doing Axel F. Anticipation and Listener Feedback. I listened to that one. It's a really good episode. It's really, really funny. And you're on it, too. I was not expecting you.
Yeah, I dropped a voicemail for them about Dune coverage. But yeah, this was a feedback episode, so they had some mailbag. And they had a very funny Apple podcast review from a user that was pretty hilarious and brought some good giggles. So
that's
definitely
great.
Check it out.
That's great to hear. All right, lastly, Wool Shift Dust is finishing up Beacon 23 this week and doing a podcast on the Silo book Shift. So plenty going on all the feeds.
Content train keeps rolling.
David, give me some thank yous.
Thank yous are to our Discord server boosters. I was just scrolling to the place in my outline, and we've got Gnarls, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Duve 71, Captain Gingy 56. I think we should read it out in that way all the time. That's Richard W., who's one of Aaron's Fallout co-hosts or Radioactive Ramblings co-hosts. And we got a new server booster as of yesterday. Athena.
Nice.
Agilia? Is that how I pronounce the last part? I'm not sure.
It could be anything. There's no way to know.
But thank you all so very much for making our Discord server a more fun place. It gives us a bunch of bells and whistles. And it's just another measure of your support for the community. So thank you for that, because that really does help the community. To our lore masters, to our top tier subscribers, be they Supercast or Patreon subscribers, we'd like to give them a shout out at every turn. This is one of the benefits for being a big supporter. We have Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andra B., Kwong Yu, Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Aaron T., Sub Zero, Aaron K., Dally V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, and forever last but never least, Adrienne. Thank you all so very much. Thank you to all of our subscribers. Thank you to all of our listeners. We love this community. We have a lot of fun producing all this. Like, we got a lot of crazy amount of content coming out for y'all.
I know. And I know. Busy.
We just generally enjoy what we do. And so if you feel like you want to mirror that enjoyment, feel free to subscribe and support the community. And if that's not within, you know, your circumstances, that's fine too. We're just glad to have you here. Join us on the Discord and send us in feedback and participate how you can. But again, thank you to everyone.
Thank you, everyone. I'm down 2 of 3 podcasts that I have to record today. And I will see you all on the next episode.
It's Hot Lore Summer.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Nicole, did you ever notice how the sign by Ace of Base has really strange key changes?
I did not, Mark. I'm a real person.
Well, let me tell you about it. I'll let you talk about neuroscience gobbledygook.
Yes, I thought you'd never ask.
This is the Nevermind the Music podcast,
where one psychologist
and one musician
deep dive into the songs you love,
so you don't have to.
And there's plenty of time to get off topic.
From Semi-Charmed Life to The Way You Move.
And who could forget The Crossroads?
Is it The Crossroads or The Crossroads?
Save it for the episode, Mark.
Listen to Nevermind the Music
wherever you get your podcasts.